Okay, Ramblers, let's get rambling.
Now where it is now, everybody wants a piece of the market.
Oh my God, that is funny!
I don't remember asking you a thing.
Now funny how? I mean funny like I'm a clown, I amuse you?
With all due respect, what the are you talking about?
Oh, I'm sorry, did I break your concentration?
What the so funny about me? Tell me. Tell me what's wrong.
You represent the idiocy of today.
I did not know that.
English, motherfucker, do you speak it?
Are you listening to me?
How's my shit together?
Nice personality combination, hostile and intolerant.
So that's it then. No one else really knows anything.
Welcome back to Dr. Jacks. I'm Tom Howricky on the board. SP Futures down 12. NASDAQ Futures down 41. But it's a pittance compared to the huge rally we had yesterday. Not very much at all. Do we have Professor Carl?
You most certainly do.
I assume you had you got the call from the White House yesterday and you had long futures, I assume?
Oh, good God. You know, wasn't that interesting in that as soon as the futures unlocked Sunday night, they, of course, you know, spiked. But there had been no announcement yet.
No. We got to get your trade in first.
Well, but you have to have gotten the reason for the trade because, you know, if you're wrong about something, I mean, if you went into the weekend short, you know, you got like 70 handles up your butt.
Oh, yeah, if you covered right away.
Well, yeah, then it just got worse.
Yeah.
Right? But I mean, you know, but there's nothing you can do over the weekend if you go to the lockup with a position on that you're sitting on it, whatever it is, and that one would have hurt a lot.
Plus, if you're the first people in, and you goose people at night when there's probably not a lot of people trading, even if you have to pay up, now they become the chasers.
Well, yeah, they have to.
Yeah, that's the scourge of being a market maker is you're very susceptible to somebody that actually has information.
Yeah, and so it's you know, I mean, back during the 07-08 time frame, I used to trade overnight with some regularity, and in the futures, and it would when I started doing it was actually a reasonable game because the volume was thin. The number of people with a surprise to shove in your keister was relatively infrequent. Yeah, it happened, but not all that often. I was never crazy enough to sit through a lockup with something big on that. That's a good way to get carried out on your shield. But that didn't happen. But I used to do it, and then in the time period, like during that and after it, what was clearly inside baseball and spoofing and other manipulative games got to the point and went up my butt enough times that I was like, no, I'm not doing it anymore.
And the more sophisticated it got, the less you could count on an increasingly huge number of regulators doing anything about it.
Well, that was, I think I've mentioned on the show before, I caught a blatant example of the spoofing stuff over July 4th holiday, sitting on my couch watching a movie once during that period of time, and I put up a YouTube on it and got the CME extremely annoyed with me. I actually got a phone call.
Yeah, well, they keep pretending there's nothing wrong.
Oh, they got really angry that I'd gone public with it, and ultimately I ended up helping the government understand what was going on. Some people, this is the funny thing about this, Chief. You know, we supposedly have these regulators, and we have these people that supposedly, manipulating markets is a criminal offense. All right, at least in theory. Of course, nobody ever goes to jail anymore. Well, a few people actually did for doing this. But the part that I found most astounding was that they didn't actually understand what I was showing them. I actually had to walk them through it. I went out to D.C. and did so, but I actually had to walk them through it in a room with 15 guys
they are
in there.
Absolute masters at regulating everybody's behind on the last crisis and are totally useless toward the next crisis.
Well, the astounding part of it to me, Chief, was that they literally did not understand what they were looking at.
They have people in an open outcry system, which they still sort of have over in the what are still traded on the floor with the CME and the CBOE. They now have a bunch of regulators standing around, like, watching it.
Yeah.
Now, you and I can't make a trade verbally anymore. Until we put it in our computer, it's not a trade. Until it
doesn't count.
Right. Doesn't count. So what they're standing there watching, I have no idea.
Yeah, it's just another, you know, it's another day at the office, so to speak, from my point of view, I guess. It was just one of those kinds of things. And then, you know, there was, you brought up some stuff on the list, you know, with the thing about the offshoring and, you know, what's been driven by that and how it should impact GDP. Right?
By the way, the number, actually, the friend and client who gave me the number called up and told me I was wrong and the number wasn't 2,000, it was like 11,000. I said, you're the one who said two. Okay.
Okay, so multiply by 5.5,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, so let's back up here. The question on the table that we were amongst ourselves before we went on here and tried to be somewhat accurate on it is if somebody offshores, they're essentially their call center or whatever. Now, is that considered an import of services? Is it tariffed? And, oh, by the way, is it counted? And the question is, how do you get it? If the check comes from here, I guess you could count it if you really look for it. If the check came from your Vietnam office, I don't know that anybody would ever catch it. But it is as when you look at the GDP, your GDP numbers are all the stuff that you and I and everybody else consume. It's consumption plus investment that people make in the future. So if we go out and buy, you know, 2x4s and start building a hot dog stand, that's considered part of it. And the government spending is part of it. Then it's the net of imports versus exports of goods and services. Well, the goods parts is relatively easy. They show up by ship or train or whatever. Now, the other part, I don't know how strict they are on that, Robert. That's what I was asking you guys. I mean, so...
Well, it's X minus I. So imports are a negative.
Yeah.
So the thing is that it's... And this was the point that I was making on the list, and that I think people should understand, is that the drop in consumption, you know, if I was working in the call center, now I'm not, right?
That's income, but then theoretically you're not spending it because you didn't make it. So there. Yeah,
well, I can't spend what I don't have.
Right.
Okay. So, you know, that.
Well, it could come out of savings for a while, but it's not get too complicated.
Well, but not for long, right? I mean, you know, that's my retained earnings.
Right,
is kind of the, you know, the accounting way to look at it, right? So that's fine. That one is almost impossible for the government to avoid having show up in the numbers. The problem is the game playing that goes on to avoid recognizing the services import is.
But question one is, you know, we have these tariffs, which I'm not so much totally against them, Carl, as I am the way they're being presented. And 90% of the Americans think that they're not the ones getting screwed. God, does this remind me? I hate to say this because I don't know how many listeners read Tom Sawyer, but remember the part about the fence?
Oh yeah.
The upshot was, his parents were pissed at him or something, or they made him paint white. Well, in those days, it was whitewash the fence.
Whitewash, yeah.
So one of his buddies came by, man, look at you, you got to whitewash the fence. And he said something like, oh, you don't understand, this is great. I love doing this. I'm really happy that I'm doing it. It's so much fun and scary. He talks to the guy and he's saying, well, by the way, do you have another brush? he ends up having, like, what, three of his friends painting a thing, and he's like, oh, telling him what to do. And the tariffs, I mean, how many people are convinced that they're not paying them? I mean, I tell you what, these guys are good.
Well, you know, the question, so, you know, as I pointed out when all this stuff started and I started getting the emails from, you know, from all these different places, you know, buy now before the price goes up, you know, buy blah, 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 blah,
yeah.
Right? The problem with that sort of thing is if you know the tariff rate that's been announced and you know the former price, and of course they're all polite enough to give that to you because they would like you to buy it now, right, as opposed to later, along with the future price, You just told me what your operating margin is on that product. Because it's very simple mathematics to figure it out. And the underlying issue here is that when it comes to merchandise, there is an unwritten economic law that if you manage to get much beyond a 10% operating margin, somebody's going to come shoot at you in a competitive market. All right. And it's just simply because it's worth it.
Yeah.
It's not, there's nothing complicated about it. It's just that, you know, if I can make 4 or 5 sitting in treasuries with no risk, well, if I can make 11, but I got to take business operational risk, that actually sounds like a pretty good deal, right? So kind of the invisible barrier is about 10%. Well, some of these guys that were sending me this stuff were exposing 100% operating margins.
Well, some actually have those things now. It depends. It's weird. I had a lady friend years ago, and she went to, I don't know where she went to, a Target or something, but this is 15, 20 years ago. And it used to be that anybody like a Marshall Fields, remember that name, if you paid $300 for a suit, they essentially paid $150.
Right.
Right, they pretty much doubled everything. You know, because they had to put it on the racks, they had to tell you, they had to take it in for you, or these days let it out for you or something.
Yeah, but you actually got some services
for that.
Right.
Well, so anyway, this lady, this back when they first started the scans, right? You know, when you scanned everything instead of the person paying the price. Well, the scan went in, and somehow or another, the thing printed out their price, what they paid for. And she was under the impression that what you're seeing now, and I think you see it pretty much everywhere, Carl, is that the bigger the items, like you're talking about, is kind of the less of the markup. Well, she was buying like a curtain rod or something, and it was like $10, and it came out like 80 cents or something.
Oh, yeah.
Or $1.20, something somewhere in the lines.
So something obscene, right.
So something obscene, because... But then again, I mean, you could also make the case that if somebody there has to handle it once, it's $2. You know, so it really doesn't matter if it's a tack or if it's, you know, whatever.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you can come at this in a million different directions, but, I mean, I think today, if you wanted to, I mean, I still haven't done as much lately, but I still do a lot of, you know, home stuff where I... You know, trying to do some remodeling just so I could keep up on it, so I can talk about it on the show. And I know if you go into the Home Depot or someplace, I mean, you can go get tile or something like that. I mean, almost as cheap as you could have 10 years ago. But God help you if you have to use any grout or anything to put it or stick it to the ground. I mean, all the stuff that goes with it is now that's where all the money is. It's not in the 2x4; it's in the nail.
Right. Well, I mean, I. Basically, we constructed my deck last spring, and holy crap, the fasteners.
Yeah.
Okay. And on top of that, the wood quality is garbage compared to you know what you'd be able could get 5 or 10 years ago. So I mean, it's just that was a whole other exercise. But yeah, I mean, what took my breath away was, do you want how much for this box of deck screws?
Yeah, well, that's incredible.
I mean, I'm like, excuse me.
I actually was buying them online, and I was getting them a hell of a lot cheaper at Home Depot, but. We did upstairs deck, and I'm going to say it was one over the porch, and I'm going to say I used stainless steel, and I was $1,200 into the fasteners easy.
Oh yeah, no, it was. I mean, it was insane, and but so there was that aspect of it. But you know, the other thing that was interesting, and we have to hit on this today because it just hit yesterday, was did you see the press conference? And the EO that came out of the Cheeto yesterday.
Which one? I was watching the Secretary of the Treasury in front of Congress. I never saw anything that absurd in my life.
No, it was the drug pricing thing.
Well, you know, how is this any different than Biden doing that 2 years ago and never got anywhere?
Oh, tremendously so. First off, Biden didn't do it. He lied about it. He waved his arms around. And insulin, which by the way, if you happen to need it, is not a trivial thing, right?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, don't get me wrong. It's
your voice is going up and down here. What are you talking into, a garbage can? You got a different.
No,
now you're fine, but then it kind of goes. Whatever.
Well, that's kind of weird.
Yeah.
No, there's always same microphone.
There you go. Changed. Okay, you're fine now.
Obviously, if you need. Insulin is a really big thing, right? But in the grand scheme of things, it's a one-off. and it impacts those people who are insulin dependent, and it doesn't impact anybody else. No, what Trump stuck out there. Now the problem is always in the implementation on these things. Right? It is never in the language.
Well, when you have to sign five of them a day because your pompous ass is always in front of the camera, and that's what you do all day. It's hard to follow through on any of these things.
Well, we're going to find out, okay? Because you had RFK up there. You had all of his HHS people in there too, and the FDA guys and all this. Here's what he basically said is drugs. The United States, and this is something, this is a central point of what I pointed out back when I wrote Leverage, and it's a central feature in the article that I put out a couple of years later that was had the solve the medical cost issue in the United States, not just with regards to Medicare and Medicaid, but for everybody, all right? And it's essentially this. It is and he can do it, which is the important point, not just by executive order, which, of course, anybody that comes after him. And by the way, CNBC had an article out within an hour of his press conference that basically threw all kinds of cold water on it, that the analysts are saying the drug companies have nothing to worry about. They're basically, what they're going to do is, to the extent that he pulls this off with Medicare and Medicaid, they're just going to shove it up our butts in the private
sector.
Well,
that's essentially what Biden was going to talk about, is that he was going to lower those prices, because I remember, because one of my friends is on Eliquis, and all he does is tell me about it. That was one of the things. Medicare and Medicaid, if you, Eliquis, by the way, and what's the other one, Xarelto, are blood thinners that anybody who's ever, had any kind of AFib or anything is always on. I mean, trying to get off them with a heart specialist is pretty tough. And they're $7,500 a year, and if you're on the Medicare Part D, they've essentially split it with you with the...
Because of the way it works, right?
Yeah. So I mean, I've read that their cost is $118. Now, back up a little bit, Carl. On this, I'm not gonna not cover it because I think it's very important. But what is the issue is that in this country, the prices are X, and in other places, the prices are a hell of a lot less. Now, it could just be that the people in those countries can't afford X, so they charge.
Doesn't matter.
Well, I'm just saying. We're talking about somebody with a monopoly, right? Because these things are all patented drugs.
Okay, but here's the thing. The law says you can't do that.
The law here says you can't do it, but where's the law in India?
The law says that if you... doesn't matter what the law in India says, because the law in the United States says international commerce counts.
Right, well, if you were to kick up the Merck website or something, the first thing they're going to say to you is, if you can't afford it, they'll help you out. They'll give it to you at a cheaper price.
That's illegal.
Okay, but it's... All right, if we're going to do this... Well, roll with me for a second here. If we're going to do this properly, and the guys on the show are mostly all conservative and they're willing to... How do we do it properly? Is it a patent law problem? Is it the fact that we give a 17-year, do we not negotiate? Is there something
Chief, it's easy. It's a 15 U.S.C. Chapter 1. There's a 100-plus-year-old statute that has the answer to this, and it's called jail.
Okay. All right, their solution is going to be, okay, India, you're not getting it for $11 anymore. You're paying the same as everybody else. They can do that. That's not what we want, is it?
Yes.
Why?
Because how many people are in the United States?
I'm saying they become...
No, come on. Let's do the math. How many people in the United States?
There's 330 million or thereabouts.
Correct. How many are in India?
I don't know. A couple billion?
A billion and change. Okay? 330 million, there's what, 8 billion humans on this planet?
Right,
something like that?
All right, I'm trying to not, give the president oral sex here. I'm trying to say... What I'm trying to say is, I don't care about India. Why is somebody able to produce something for a buck here and charge $200? Where is the flaw there? I don't really care about what they're selling it to in Pakistan.
The flaw there is that you're shoving it up my butt and you're making me pay the guy's bill in India.
No, that's their explanation.
No, that's the truth.
Carol.
Excuse me, Obamacare did the same thing to me.
All right, you got to roll with me on this one, bud. If something's costing them $100 and they're charging $7,500 here, I really don't care if they charge somewhere else $1,000. They're screwing those guys too, just not as much. I'm concerned about here. How do they get to do that? Why isn't there something in the law that says there's only a certain amount you can charge above, even if you have a patent?
Chief, because it's called capitalism. But here's the here's
no, it's
the
not. It's called monopoly.
All right, look. Patents give you a time limited monopoly as an incentive to produce things. They are lawful. We're not the only country that has them. Okay, they've been around as long as there have been nations. It is absolutely a creation of Congress and absolutely something that could be modified. There's actually, although the foundation of it is in the Constitution, okay, and it delegates to Congress the ability to, you know, to set the parameters on it in the Patent and Copyright Office. That's why it's there. That's not the problem. If you charge more than people can pay, and you try to do that, your sales are zero.
No, not here, because we have insurance and they don't.
Ah, now wait a minute. Ah, now you're getting to the problem.
Well, I think you and I both agree on the problem, but go ahead.
No, now you're actually getting to the issue, okay, which is that what the insurance companies are doing by getting involved in this is a violation of 15 U.S.C. Chapter 1. It's a criminal felony, and you're supposed to do 10 years in prison if you commit that felony. And this,
but nobody's ever going to go. Nobody's ever going to go to prison.
Chief, it's been to the Supreme Court twice, and they lost both times. So I'm tired of hearing that we don't have a solution to this issue, whether it be hospital pricing, whether it be drug pricing, whether it be any of these things. That's BS. There is an answer to it. It's been on the books for over 100 years. And if you force the insurance companies out of this, all right, so they do not get to get involved in the pricing decision. They either pay or they don't pay. That's an insurance decision. That's your contract. You're the one that's involved in that. Having them in the middle of that process is a felony. It is a criminal offense. And the way you solve this problem is by enforcing the three arms of antitrust law. Sherman, Clayton, both of which say you go to prison if you attempt to monopolize or restrain trade, and it does include international trade. So to the extent that you try to prevent somebody from going over to India with a suitcase, filling it full of Eliquis, and coming back across the border with it, you go to prison. Period. End of conversation.
I agree, okay? On the problem. I totally disagree on the
Now hold on a minute. Then you got a third law, which is part of antitrust, which is called Robinson-Patman. All right, now I'm extremely familiar with this because we shoved this up some people's keister when I ran MCS that tried to screw us. Robinson-Patman says you may not discriminate on price between purchasers of like kind and quantity. End of conversation.
I get all that.
All right, so here's the thing. I'm a individual person. I need Eliquis. The guy over in India is an individual person. He needs Eliquis. There's two people. They can't charge different prices. Everybody has to pay the same. Now, you can charge whatever you want to charge. Capitalism says I get to set whatever price. The problem is you can't charge me $1,000 a month and charge a guy over there $5. All right, and if you try it, you go to jail.
Well, I would not go at it that way at all. That just,
well, that's how you solve it.
No, you don't, because it hasn't been solved that way.
Well, no, it is how you solve it. It's that the government, I don't care if you're a Democrat or a Republican, the Democrats and Republicans for the last several decades allowed the conspiracy, which is illegal.
Why can't
everybody.
Why can't I get you and some of the rest of the dudes on the show to start from the beginning and say, okay, Jonas Salk, maybe it was him, maybe it wasn't, invented the polio vaccine.
Yep.
Okay, so in this country, I don't know, well, it was really early in my lifetime, but
he gave it away, by the way.
I understand that. I mean, early in my lifetime, I remember my parents and grandparents saying, before that came out, nobody even go to the beach in the summer. Everybody's absolutely paranoid about polio because iron lungs were not a good thing. President Roosevelt and his, he had some kind of, it was a polio strain, but he got it later, right?
Well, he got, the polio, the entire polio story, I could spend an hour on it.
Yeah, but okay, but what I'm saying is he, you know, his, just a little aside, I think.
But he was paralyzed by it,
He ended up, he was a big, strong dude. Otherwise, he wouldn't have been able to do what he did, because he would stand up there basically just using his arms for like an hour for a speech. But, right. I mean, he was strong as an axe. But he was in the Navy. He went out, he swam from like one island to the other on a Friday night out in Nantucket or some damn place. And he walked out of the water, and Friday got a little bit of a chill, and on Monday, Sunday, he was paralyzed.
Yeah, that's how quick it hit.
Anyway, but I'm saying, okay, so he invents a thing, he gets a patent. Now, first of all, we're pretty slippery on who exactly did all the work on polio and all the rest of this stuff.
Well, there's all sorts of problems there, too.
Okay, I'm sorry, but let's not go into those. Maybe talk about that on Friday. But he, I'm going to say my dad was making $2,500 as a policeman. I'm going to say if forced to, he would have given a year's pay to get me a polo shot. Because that's the way people felt about it. And question is how much? I mean, how much can God charge for breathing? I mean, at some point here, you have to say, now if we have to send poor Carl down to wrestle the polio vaccine out of the wisdom tooth of an alligator in the Amazon, well, maybe it should cost $1,000 a shot. But if it costs $2 a shot, $1,000 is a little high. I mean, where do you go with this? And there doesn't seem to be any limit to it, other than how much you can weasel out of insurance or the people.
Well, Chief. If you force the decoupling of that, because here's the thing, you could say, well, you know, we need to impose some outside, you know, price control.
Right? Whenever you pull something out of the competitive marketplace, you got a problem of some kind, right?
Okay. Look, Eliquis is arguably maybe a better drug than warfarin, which of course is off patent. It's dirt cheap. It's rat poison.
Yep.
Okay. In small amounts, it's a blood thinner. In large amounts, it kills.
Killed Stalin, didn't it?
By the way, if you OD on Eliquis, you'll die too. So, here's the reality, though. In virtually every single case, there are alternatives. They're just less desirable for whatever reason. All right. If you get the insurance aspect of this, whether it be Medicare, Medicaid, or private companies, and you actually enforce the law, which says they cannot get involved in the procurement and the pricing, it's illegal. It's not the business of insurance. This went to the Supreme Court twice, and they lost both times. If you enforce that, by the way, they tried to argue that McCarran-Ferguson, which is a law.
We got to go dash here. We'll talk about it on Friday. I would rather say, you know what, guys? If you can't produce it for this and other people can, you're going to get a $2 a pill something, Chief, and we're going to go out to somebody else to produce it.
All right, so why don't, if you enforce the law, this problem goes away in a day. Okay?
Let's talk about it. I don't think so. But
yes, it does. It didn't exist before this.
I think at some point, you have to have some idea of what the markup should be.
Oh boy, we're going to have God himself come up with what it should be. You know what? That's why we have a market. It takes care of this.
That's the point, is we don't have a market when there's a patent.
And the reason is the insurance companies and the providers are all involved in an illegal scheme, which is why we have the problem.
Before
they were, back in the 1960s and the 1970s, when I was growing up, when you were growing up and you were younger, it wasn't a problem because they weren't doing it.
We'll tweet it continued on Friday.
All right.
SP Futures down 16, NASDAQ Futures down 36. Quick break, we'll have Mr. Joel.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Ricky on the board. S&P futures down 16. NASDAQ futures down 35, which is nowhere near. Just as a way of review for those that were long yesterday. Yesterday was probably one of the biggest up days I think I've ever seen. Dow was up 1,100, S&P up 184, NASDAQ up 779. It was 4% on the NASDAQ. It all started Sunday night when we have a CPI coming out today, so we'll see where that adds to the rally or doesn't. But it all came out Sunday night. We took off. This announcement that came out of China, you know, whatever. You could say it was front run, not front run, but we're being pushed around by these announcements. Up, down, and it makes for interesting trading. It's actually good for people that do trade because there's a lot of movement up and down that if you catch it right, it's a long premium market, which I think hurts probably the market makers more than it does the retail people, but that's the way that is. DAX up 38.1%, FTSE up 17.2%, CAC around up 13.2%, so these guys are up a little bit across the board. Asia, Nikkei up another 539 because those guys are up yesterday, but not as much as us. It's another 1.5%. Hang Seng down 441, which is almost 2%. That's interesting. Shanghai up 5.2%. Those guys have been kind of non-existent, but it's been Hang Seng and the Nikkei that have been going all over the place. Bonds, and these are ones you got to watch out for yesterday. If I'm a little concerned about the rally yesterday, it's because the interest rates were way up. We got the 10-year is up to 4.46. The bond is up to 2.67. So whenever you have days where interest rates are going up and the market's going up, it always feels a little weird to me. Oil up 54 cents, 62.49, so way above that 55.50 print last Monday. Brent up 48 cents, 65.44. Natural gas unchanged, 3.62. Arbob back up to 2.14. It was down to $2, so it's up 14 cents. Gold, which actually got annihilated yesterday, is up 33.60 today, 32.61. It was down like $80 yesterday. Silver up 57 cents, 33.20, so making somewhat of a comeback. Copper up 5 cents, 4.67. Foreign exchange, again, this dollar was huge yesterday. Now, today, not as much. So the euro is back to 1.11. It was like 1.13 for a while, and then dropped pretty bad yesterday, and then now it's back up a little bit today. British pound, 1.32. Bitcoin, up 1,900 at 103.745. What do you have for us, traffic, weather, sports?
Morning, Chief. It's currently 6:37 a.m. here in Chicago. We're looking at about 61 degrees right now with a high of 69. Low clouds with a thunder shower late this afternoon. Tonight will be raining spots, otherwise low clouds with a low of 54 degrees. Phoenix, Arizona, 78 degrees right now with a high of 89. Not as hot with plenty of sunshine. Tonight will be clear and cooler with a low of 63. Traffic in Chicago, Iman Kennedy from Monroe's, 20 minutes. We're looking at 44 minutes. Iman Edens from Lane Cook. Iman Eisenhower from Wolf, 36 minutes. Iman Dan Ryan from 95th, 15 minutes. Lastly, Iman Stevenson from 24 to the Dan Ryan, 36 minutes. MLB yesterday, the Cubs beat the Marlins 5-2. Diamondbacks beat Giants 2-1. Today we got White Sox at Reds at 5:40 p.m. Marlins at Cubs at 6:40 p.m. And lastly, Diamondbacks at Giants 8:45 p.m. NBA semifinals. Yesterday the Knicks beat Celtics 121-113 and the Timberwolves beat Warriors 117-110. Both New York and Minnesota lead the series 3-1. And NHL round 2, yesterday Hurricanes beat Capitals 5-2 and Oilers beat Golden Knights 3-0. Both winning teams lead the series as well 3-1. Lastly, today, Jets at Stars, 7 p.m. Back over to you, Chief.
We have Professor Joel.
Been called a lot of things, Chief. Good morning. What's going on there on Wells Street?
Well, we had a big rally yesterday, and today we're coming back a little bit, but not very much, considering the size of the rally. I think I want to be get on some of these mailing lists, don't you?
I was referring to the sirens, Chief.
Oh, well, we got engine company number one downstairs, so they do all the expressway work close around here, so whenever there's a crack up, off they go.
Okay. So I don't know if I got your... were you referring to a memo, or are you referring to the overall market?
Just the fact that we seem to be moving... The market's moving on announcements that people seem to have before you and me.
Yeah, I mean, I guess you could have, you know, read the tea leaves a little bit. I mean, the fact that Trump was going over there to, you know, to actually have sit-down discussions with him.
He didn't go. It was his
brother. Well, okay. Yeah. Bessent went. Better Bessent than Navarro. If you went short into the weekend, then you're obviously, you know, we used to have the Fed put. Well, now you have the Trump put.
Yep.
And it's a lot bigger than the Fed put. I heard you talking up 1,000 points yesterday. I absolutely hate days like that. They're very, you know, you're certainly not buying the open and a lot of stuff, which, you know, probably worked on some stuff. It's hard to fight the temptation not to fade absolutely everything off something, off a move like that. But we're in some elevated air here. The most interesting technical point that I can give you is that I call it the pre-liberation day high. Now, I don't know if you know the circumstances. You had a Fed day, you had Powell speak, you had Trump come out, and originally the Wall Street Journal broke that it was 10% tariffs across the board. And the S&Ps, the June S&Ps rallied to 58.73 and a quarter.
Yep.
And then, boom, then they did the very hard-to-interpret board of what the actual tariffs were. And we tanked and we never came back. So, to me, we're at a very, very important level. We have a CPI coming up, although I don't think that's going to give us any major clues into things because, we haven't seen, you know, if tariffs are going to have any impact on inflation. And there's camp of people that say it's not going to affect inflation at all. I don't happen to be one of those.
Now, it is absolutely stunning to me, Joel, and this is maybe a little more political, but I don't understand how come I have some talked to very intelligent people. At the end of the day, they refuse to admit that this is a tax. It's it's intended for this, it's intended for that. I don't care what it's intended for. It's the single biggest tax increase in any of our lifetime that did not originate through Congress, and people are in denial. Why are they in denial?
I don't know.
Even just the numbers for everybody to stick in their head. I don't think you need to stick it in your head, but we import $3.8 trillion worth of stuff a year. $380 billion of that from China. So even if we get down to the 10% that everybody's paying, that's $380 billion in taxes. If China is going to be hit with 10 regular plus 20 fentanyl tax, which appears to be the compromise for 90 days, right? What's 30% of $380 billion?
A lot.
It's a lot. So that's $100 billion right there. That we are paying that. Now, you can go into the specifics of it, which I could do on a blackboard and say, well, okay, are the people from China or Switzerland or any other damn place, are they going to lower their prices to remain somewhat competitive? Maybe. Then maybe the people here, now that their competition price is up, maybe the people here are going to raise their price. It is a huge tax, and it's going to be inflationary at the same time that the Fed is pouring more money back into the system. That's why I think yesterday you saw the 30-year rate almost make it to 5%. I mean, this is not a zero-sum game, Joel. I mean, I know you know it's not, but at the end of the day, we are paying the tariffs, right? It may not turn out to be 10%, but it'll be 8.5 or something, right?
That's the way I interpret it. And if you boil down the numbers, you know, like you did, I mean, was it just like a high bar? Like, okay, instead of 145%, it's 30.
Yeah.
So that's a good thing. It's
30 higher than it was. So whatever it is, I mean, everybody's convinced that this is a huge plus. Fact is, it was zero. Now it's 30. Now. There are reasons, I mean, we go through them on the show all the time, Joel. Fortunately, we don't bore you with them, but there are reasons why, I was kind of going through Carl with, there are reasons why, you know, okay, when we went to the free trade ideas back in the 70s and 80s and 90s, the economists at the time, sort of had the idea that if you have economic freedom in some places, they're going to turn out a little bit like us. And now it turns out that maybe in some cases that hasn't worked out that way. And really all we've done in some areas, not every place, That's why I can't understand how these guys are so universal with this 10%. In some places, people are, and corporations here are probably the biggest sinners. They've offshored to places where there's child labor, slave labor, you name it. No pollution problems, those kinds of things. And, oh, by the way, we're importing drugs from places that nobody ever, probably, I won't say nobody, but maybe they don't check the facility like we do here. Okay, now that's a little different than the original economists thought about, right? Now, so if we're concerned about the Chinese using slave labor or child labor, I think if we actually want to address that, we should address that and not just say, okay, 10% and it's all right. In fact, that probably makes it worse, right, if that's what our concern is. If we're worried about the Indian penicillin factory not inspecting the place right, maybe we say we're not going to buy any penicillin from India because you won't let us inspect it. It has nothing to do with tariffs, does it? What are we really trying to accomplish? And I tell you what, I'm getting zero out of this administration other than a taxes on people and telling them it's not. That's all I'm getting. Or am I just being too harsh?
No, Chief. You're taking like a rational person and looking at the circumstances and what's being laid out there. But Chief, no one gives a damn.
All right, I agree.
So you just have to. The whole fentanyl thing. Okay, yeah, it's going to stop coming in from China. If you or I want fentanyl, we're going to get fentanyl.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's a lot. But, this is the way I got to wrap it up here. This is just like a silver lining market. And they are just bad news, for the most part, is good news, and good news is great news. And when the markets get that kind of euphoria, then you have to go with the momentum. I said this last week. I thought that, you know, if you looked at the price action from early April and you were upset and about your portfolio and stuff and worried about the economy and the tariffs, I said this last week when the S&P was 100 points higher. It's probably not a bad time to look at things. And now we've increased. So, got a lot of money managers behind the ball. You know, the dips are short. It's just a Goldilocks scenario. And at one point, ruling out new all-time highs for the year. Well, they're going to rally the Dow 1,000 points every time we make a deal. That's just that's going to happen in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, we got like 70 deals left.
Yeah, exactly.
But you know what?
All right, Chief.
Just real quick though. For us, with that, having the puts protection for just about everybody, not everybody, it's people don't need them, we don't have them. We've been able to roll these puts up and down for profits like five times this year. It's never happened.
I know. It's not being smart. You're not trying to outsmart the market. It's working for you.
Anyway, talk to you in a little bit.
Okay, thank you.
Do we have Kenny?
Yes, we do.
Kenny, how are you, buddy?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing all right. So you got the memo at 4:30, and actually, you needed to get the memo on Friday, really.
I got to tell you, I'm a little bit surprised myself because I said on TV on Friday morning that I really thought, and I think they'd prepared everyone else for kind of just these de-escalation talks, just get everybody to calm down. Wasn't really expected to be, you know, any outline, or at least that's not how I understood it. Although I did say, if we get one, the market's going to absolutely surge. And then Sunday night or Sunday afternoon, you know, when we started to see those headlines saying, you know, not only did they de-escalate kind of the tension in the room, but they started to lay out a plan and an outline, and, you know, they're making massive progress. So on the one hand, I think it's great that, you know, they've taken that ridiculous tariff risk off the table. And while
for 90 days.
For 90 days. And I'm assuming, you know, I'm remaining positive and saying, okay, by the end of 90 days, I'm assuming they're going to have a plan in place. Scott Bessent said he's going back to have more discussions in 2 weeks. So it's not like they're not going to go back. They're going to continue these discussions. So I'm in the camp that we're going to get to the place we want to be. I'm also in the camp that, you know, a lot of people are bitching about the 30% tariffs. I got to tell you something. The 20% tariffs because of fentanyl, I fully support, because I think it's bullshit that they've been sending fentanyl to Mexico and bringing it into this country and killing Americans left and right. So I have zero problem with a 20% tariff for a total of 30, because 20% of it's on fentanyl. When they decide they want to stop playing that game, then we can talk about taking those tariffs away. But I don't think it's a negative at all.
Well, I think, you know, I certainly respect your opinion on that. I don't honestly believe anything these guys tell me. They're just like every other politician, only worse.
Okay.
We had
different conversation, because I agree with you. I don't believe anything China says.
I don't either. As I just was mentioning with actually Kenny and Joel, what is our goal in this? What I don't want to see happen, Kenny, is that, and I think what I am seeing it, because I just look at the numbers. What I see is somebody essentially creating a situation, creating a crisis.
Okay.
Running the stuff up to 120%, which everybody knew wasn't going to be the real number, because there's stuff we don't even get from anywhere else that I don't know what you can do with that. And all of a sudden we're down to 30, and everybody thinks this is terrific. Well, it's 30 that wasn't there before. And you're also talking about a population that somehow or another doesn't figure out that they're the ones paying it, because we got these guys telling them they're not. I listened to the Secretary of Treasury in front of Congress yesterday. I was appalled. Some guy kept asking him who exactly is paying the tariffs. He refused to answer. Refused to answer. I mean, what do you mean? You're paying it, you idiot. I mean, this is not hard. Now,
we are paying it. I agree. But we're not paying it on the stuff you and I need every day.
Sure we are.
Milk and food and chicken and steak.
Sure we are.
What are you paying it on? You're paying it on baby stuff? Somebody said...
Next time you go into the car repair shop,
ask
yourself who's paying it. You are.
Well, 100%, because I just had the brakes down my car. I was shocked at the price.
Yeah, I mean, but what I'm saying, the idea, we're and that's why, I mean, Kenny, boy, I know you know way more about the markets and stuff than I ever learned, but somebody, we're talking about 30% on China now. By the way, I can think of a lot of reasons why we shouldn't just buy anything from China. I'd cut them off totally. So in a lot of ways, I feel worse about these guys than you do. I mean, but the point being is, $380 billion worth of stuff comes from China. Now we just added 120 to it that you and I are paying it. But without any regard to child labor, without any regard to anything. And you know, fentanyl, I don't want anybody dying from fentanyl, but we've gone through in our lifetime, and one of the guys who's been on the show with us, he was a street reporter, Eric May, for the Washington Post when he first got out of school. So it had to be, you know, 70s and 80s. So they used to be he used to cover 4 murders a week or something in Washington. And then as soon as, was it crystal meth or one of those? One of the horrible, was it crystal meth? And then was the first one before OxyContin? Which one came first? Whatever. So as soon as that hit the street, it was 12 murders a week. So we've had nothing but iterations of these horrible drugs that absolutely beat the crap out of people. I don't know if you've, fortunately, never, I still drive around the South Side a little bit, because that's where my mechanics are and my family. And God, can you go down the street in some of these neighborhoods, you see people walking along, and you look at them and you go, my God, that person probably is no more than 35. They look like they're 70. I mean, they're not. They look different than anybody who's ever been a drunkard, anybody who's ever been a smoker. I think it's OxyContin, but I'm not sure. Yeah, but every iteration of these drugs get here, and the people who are involved are right here. Yes, it's coming from someplace. But a lot of people here are making a lot of money off it, or else it wouldn't be here. I mean, the Chinese are not selling it on the streets. You go in some of these neighborhoods, the guy in the middle of the street selling the crap is in an orange windbreaker. And we can't arrest the guy? Or we let him back out, or is the next guy back up? I mean, the idea that the money from fentanyl is being made by Chinese people and not people here is so ludicrous to me, I can't even talk about it. The money's here. The markup's here, not there.
Yes, I understand that, but the market's here, correct. But their supply, if I understand this correctly, the supply of fentanyl comes from China, right?
It's probably coming from a bunch of, I'm not an expert on it, but it's coming from, well, what'd they say about 40 pounds last year came from Canada? What the guy on Saturday Night Live said is it's not even 5 butts full.
From China into Canada, and then it came through the border.
But I mean, we're talking 40 pounds, which is an awful, or 20 pounds. It should be nothing, I agree with you.
Right.
But to think that none of it comes in here is crazy.
No, it does come here. It comes here, for sure. But how is it? Where is it being manufactured first to then either go to Mexico or go to Canada to come into the United States? That's what I think the argument is, right? And if it's coming from China originally, then it's going to stop.
I think here's my concern with the people that are there now. And by the way, I didn't believe the guy before anymore. We're being told that, Kenny. I don't know. Does anybody really know if it's true? But one of the girls who played on our softball team, she went to the Ozarks. Her family has this big shindig there for they're all over the country. Anyway, nobody cares, but they meet at the Ozarks, and she's one of these fitness fanatics. She got up every morning and she's running through the Ozarks, and she goes, I said, how do you feel like you were safe? She goes, well, yeah, as long as you didn't go up the wrong driveway where they were cooking crystal meth. She goes, everybody knows it's being cooked down in the Ozark. I don't see the police, the federal police, showing up there like they show up to throw immigrants out. Everybody knows it's there. And yeah, it doesn't make. Nobody goes after it.
No. And if that's happening, then I agree with you. They should be knocking on those doors and arresting all those people. 100%. They should be. There's no doubt about that. Listen, we could have this conversation. Yeah. I just would like to see somebody do something about trying to slow it down, right? Trying to eliminate it, because it's killing people in this country left and right. I don't know. Killing people in Europe the same way it's killing people in America? I have no idea.
I don't want to see it either, Kenny. I'm saying there's got to be a spot where we can. I mean, you can't. Or fentanyl's a China problem. Okay, is oxycodone or whatever, crystal meth, an Ozark problem, or is it some other place? I think we're not. I see just in general in this area, nobody enforces any laws of any sign. So I'm saying we're letting here. How can I put this in some sort of? The problem I have with what's going on is not that you and I can argue about the issue, is that we're letting people define our issues for us.
Okay.
This weekend, for the third weekend in a row, I had to listen to Trumpers on the South Side ladies give me the same story about the girl who got the nose broken by the volleyball. I'm sort of tired of hearing the story. I understand that. I don't want guys playing with girls and hurting them. I mean, you know that. I don't want that. Okay, but I'm not going to. That's not on my list of 10 things I'm worried about this country. I don't know that it's the top five, and I refuse to believe, like Newsmax would say, there's like thousands of guys playing with girls in sports. I don't see any guys playing women's basketball in college. Do you? But if you listen to some of this stuff, the issue is, in other words, I don't like people defining the issue for me. You and I will figure out what to argue about. We don't need somebody else to tell us what to argue about, do we?
Wait. When you say that, I'm confused, because you do see men competing against women in swimming, in track. You do see
how big?
Well, that's exactly the point. It may not be big, but it shouldn't be at all.
I get that. I understand it. And if you made you and I president today in the Oval Office, we'd say we don't want that. What are we doing? But I'm saying it's that. I'm not going to let that tell me it. To me, as I used to have, a lot of Catholic friends that were older would only vote for somebody because of the abortion issue. I said, I'm with you on the abortion part, but I'm not going to, and then they were irate because Bush invaded Iraq because they voted. I said, well, you become these single issue voters and let people define for you what you're supposed to look at. You can't let people do that. Kenny, you and I got to make absolutely sure we don't.
No, I don't. I'm not a single voter issue. Yes, I don't support abortion the way that they support it. I support it up to a point.
Yeah, look, me too.
Daughters, I get it. I support it up to a point. I don't support it at 8 months or 9 months. I just don't. I can't see how somebody could.
I don't either.
Right?
Anyway, so what, other than making so much money yesterday that you don't have to worry about it anymore, what do you think today?
So listen, today we're going to see it. We should see it pull back a little bit. The futures are indicating such a move. I think that's exactly right. I think yesterday's move was, while very dramatic, I think it was a little bit overdone. But I think part of that was just kind of this sense of relief. It created a big gap in the charts. Every chart's got a big gap in it now, the S&P, the NASDAQ. And so I think at some point over the next couple of weeks, we're going to see that gap filled, so the market will back off a little bit, which is actually good, because after a move like that, you need to see it kind of back off, churn a little bit, and build some more support for itself before it starts to move ahead. So I fully expect that we'll see us kind of trade here. The bias will be a little bit lower. But look, today we're going to get CPI. If CPI surprises to the downside, meaning it's weaker, which is better, then I think it's going to ignite the whole move again, because people are going to say, look at this, inflation's coming down. We're not going to get inflation. And so all this idea that inflation was going to surge because of the tariff, that narrative has to change if the CPI comes in weaker. Well,
do you believe the CPI?
Well, so there's your other conversation, because you and I have this all the time. What do you believe, right? Do you believe the data that they publish, or don't you? There is some data that I believe. There's other data that I'm not so sure I believe. I'd like to say that the CPI is at least a consistent data point. Whether I believe it or not, the market believes it. And so you have to kind of pay attention to it, right?
Well, when we start talking about, the government collected $16.7 billion in tariffs in April. Or where are we? Yeah, in April.
Yeah.
It's probably going to be 25 in May. So if you get to their number, it's going to be something like 35, 40 a month. They're very sneaky with sales tax. You can raise sales tax, and it doesn't go into the CPI, I don't believe. I don't see how you keep tariffs out of the CPI. Do you?
No, I don't either. But I don't. But again, I'm not a CPI expert. I don't know necessarily what's going to go in and what's going to go out. So it's going to be interesting just to see what happens. But if we get today's CPI, tomorrow you're going to get, or Thursday you're going to get the PPI, which is prices at, inflation at the producer level, and you'll see what kind of producers are saying about what's happened. And so it's going to continue to be, I think, a little bit rocky. Not rocky in a bad sense, like we're going to see these dramatic sell-offs anymore, but I think we're going to just churn here for a little bit, right? And churn now, I think the gap, so I think it's 56.80 or something. I put it in my notes one. But from the gap, I think that's probably the low end of the range, and I think 6,000 at the high end of the range. That's wide, I understand it, but there's a lot that can happen. If we get the reconciliation bill, if they really pass that, that's going to be another boost, right? Because that'll be all positive in terms of how the market views it. If we don't get the reconciliation bill and taxes go up dramatically the way they're expected to, if they don't get the bill, then that's certainly going to be.
This is another one of the things I harp on it too much. Okay? We just have had the single biggest tax increase in our lifetime.
With what? The tariff?
Tariff.
Yeah, but look, that hasn't really happened yet.
Well,
right?
It was 16.7 last month. Collected.
Yeah, but okay. Where'd you get that data point?
It's everywhere. I mean, it was on Wall Street Journal. Everybody had it yesterday. That's how much they collected last month in tariffs. Now, it probably was the last couple of weeks, but I'm saying it. The estimates are, their estimates are $600 billion. I don't think they're going to get there, but say they get to $400 billion. What is that? That's 40 a month, right?
It's 40 a month. Yeah.
Well, that's a lot. I mean.
That's a lot. Yeah, sure.
So I'm saying let's not. In fact, their $600 billion number, if it ever came to that, is way more than all the corporate taxes collected. I don't know if you knew that.
Yeah, that would be more than. Yes, that would be.
That's sort of a change in the way we pay taxes in this country. Didn't I read somewhere in this Constitution we used to have that all revenue bills are supposed to come from the House?
They are supposed to come from the House, yes.
This one?
This one did not. Not at the moment, it didn't.
And it's the biggest one ever.
It's the biggest one ever, but I got to tell you, I'm in the camp that it's being used as a negotiating tactic, and it's not going to be what everybody thinks it's going to be. That's what I think. I'm still playing on the side that, okay, they stunned the system, they're going to bring people to the table, we're going to get these new trade agreements, and then it's all going to settle down and prices will adjust, and they won't be.
Every one of the big shots has said, no matter what, 10% stand.
Yeah, I think 10% is staying.
Okay, no, and we're doing that. Why exactly? I mean, do we really dislike Australia, which we have a huge surplus with? Do we dislike Switzerland? Do we? I mean, what do all these people do to us exactly?
Well, you know, they don't. And so the 10% that he says is going to stay, it's always open to negotiation, I guess, right? Cool. So you may know in 3 months from now when this all settles down, then you might just start to see that start to fade, right? That will go away. I don't know what the tariff was before. Was there a tariff on Australia stuff?
I don't think before? So. But here's I always like the joust, Kenny, because I learned so much my jousting. Why doesn't anybody believe that I'm starting to believe that it's just a real sneaky way of a huge tax increase and people thinking it isn't? You could never imagine them trying to blow a $500 billion tax increase through either a retail sales tax or income tax increase or Social Security tax increase. They could never do it, yet they've done it with this. And everybody thinks, like I said, 10 or 100 times, it's like Tom Sawyer painting the fence. This is fun.
Okay, but if Trump takes these tariffs, all the money they collect from the tariffs, and ends up, you end up getting a rebate check because...
You're not going to get that. No way. I'll bet you two drinks right now. We're not getting a rebate check.
Wasn't that one of the discussion points on what could possibly be done?
Yeah. Well,
money.
Kenny, we've been down that road before. Tax you later. Don't worry. It'll benefit you in the end. Which end? Bend over that end. Yeah. Don't worry. You're going to get a raise at your job. One of my clients just called me and said that his in some big merger. And again, we can talk about this someday. But some big advertising merger that of course, just got approved. It's the number two advertising firm in the world. Evidently, I think just merged at number four. Well, of course, that's okay. Now, when you do that, that means one gets to merge with three then because they remain competitive and you end up with nobody, right? And so, I mean, we've done this with airlines. We've done this with pharmacies. We've done this with Defense Department people. Every merger is a good one. Well, first thing the guy does after approval is lay off like 7,000 or 10,000 people and said he's going to go have a big offshore thing over in India. Well, I'll tell you what. There's 10,000 people that it's going to take forever on the tariffs to get back, isn't it? I mean, we were losing people faster than we're gaining them, I think.
Yeah, no, I hear you. Listen, I'm not saying it's easy. It's not easy at all, for sure. But I also think something had to be done, right? Something had to be done to... I'm in the camp that I just don't trust China. I've never trusted China. I think we're too dependent on China. I think we're way too dependent on China, and it had to change.
But look at how even we have been led by the nose by these people. We've had this conversation now for 15 minutes.
Yep.
China is one-tenth of our imports, and we've talked about them 90% of the time.
Yes, but look, you say they're one-tenth of our imports, but where do we get all our medicines from? Emerging markets?
I'm just saying, we got this 10% on everybody, friend or foe.
Okay. So that's probably going to have to be rediscussed because I agree with you. You shouldn't be hurting your friends at all. You shouldn't be. I mean, you should have fair trade agreements, but you shouldn't be hurting them.
See, I think that the whole 90% of the reason of this from the Trump administration is a massive tax, a massive regressive tax, and whatever good they can pile out of it to convince people of it, they're doing.
Yeah, I can see that. I mean, I can see that argument. It's interesting because I'm just in the other camp. I support this for reasons that I think we need, because I think it's going to force new trade agreements. If we get new trade agreements, it'll be better for everybody. That's kind of how I'm playing.
Well,
it's
the same thing's happening on a lesser scale in Illinois. Another 12 cents or something onto the gas tax.
Yeah.
Making us the second highest in the country. But don't worry, the streets will not have as big of bumps. Your car maintenance will go down. If I believe that, Kenny, I got to believe that. I'll believe the Brooklyn Bridge is for sale.
Yeah, no, 100%. No, 100%.
Anyway, so, hey, the market's turned up here. The NASDAQ has turned up.
Wait, did futures turn up again?
Yeah, up 950. I think we're going to be up today. I don't think we're going to be down.
No, wait. Futures aren't up. Dow is still down 200, isn't it?
You're a New York Stock Exchange. Who looks at the Dow, for God's sake? United Healthcare is down $38. That's what's hurting the Dow.
Oh, that's what's hurting it. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
By the way, what's the multiplier now? 7?
You could see the market end the day higher, yes. But I don't think it'd be by any stretch a dramatic move like it was yesterday at all.
No.
But I think after yesterday's dramatic move, it would not surprise me if we started to give back a little bit today, just as it digests that move. Now, if you get a bunch of good headlines, like they're trying to make these good headlines out of what he's doing in Saudi Arabia, he's going to come back with trillions of dollars in committed investment assets to this country, that would be positive news. And if you get a headline like that, then that's going to help to fuel the market advance. But I would not be surprised to see us kind of just churn a little bit lower today. But we could end up higher. You're absolutely right. We could.
We'll talk about it next week, buddy. You be good. Be safe. SP Futures down 5. NASDAQ Futures up 11. Do we have the professor, or do you want to go a quick break? Up to you, Ricky.
We have the professor.
Professor, how are you, buddy?
Doing well.
Well, that's good. Are you done with the quarter semester?
Semester's over. Yeah, I just graded my last paper last night.
So now you got 3 months. Your feet up with a beer.
Yeah. Well, not really.
not with that many kids as you have.
Maybe Walter Williams. Maybe for Professor Walter Williams at George Mason University, he was in an interview and he told the journalist that professors are underworked and overpaid. And I'm thinking to myself, I don't know where he's working, but that's not the case on my end. Yeah.
Well, but you're one of the actual working sort of professors. It's like
I got that from my parents. My parents were always they always had to work it. They didn't have the money to pay for farm mechanics to come out to our farm to work on our machinery. They didn't have the money to pay somebody to put in a road on the farm or put in the main lines. Out west, you have to irrigate your crops. And my dad would buy the material, and then he'd put in the main line himself.
Wow.
So we always kind of did things ourselves. We were very independent, very self-reliant. If we needed a road built on the farm, one of the three that we owned, or the one that we owned that we went bankrupt on, we just do it ourselves.
Well, you know, it's interesting when I was saying that, I was thinking about attorneys. Well, the stuff that flashes through my feeble brain in the morning. I mean, there's professors that actually get out there and teach people all day long and don't make a whole hell of a lot. I mean, it's a nice living, but it's not, you know, huge.
Oh, New York, I feel bad for the people at the non-Ivy League type schools in New York.
What I mean.
They don't make much at all, given the cost of living.
Well,
I think a lot of them are adjuncting to add to their income because it's really difficult in New York to be a professor if you're not working at NYU or Columbia.
Well, here in Chicago, I mean, we've got your attorney firms, right? And you've got the guys that are the ivory tower dudes that only, you know, they do merger.
Yeah.
They find ways for like Microsoft to steal companies and you know get mergers and maybe. Where they're charging $1,000 an hour and playing golf all day, but then you go to some of the places when you're here. We're gonna take you to a couple of bars where, like, they're on maybe the nearer north side. They're all the guys that are actually in court all day, you know, and they're defending people that don't have a whole lot of dough. And every one of these guys is they're doing what they're doing because they like it, and they're making a living. But boy, oh boy, the thought of them making $1,000 an hour to defend somebody at 26th Street, that's not happening. You know, I mean, there's attorneys, you know, and then there's attorneys. You know what I'm saying? I mean, we'd like to be in.
Can we go to break real quick? My son took my battery charger for my laptop.
Yes, we'll do that.
I gotta plug it in real quick.
SP Futures down 4, and NASDAQ Futures up 13. Be right back. Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. As you all know, the broad markets, especially tech, have been hot for a while. Lots of reasons: new technology, small fixed income returns, a lot of Fed cash, maybe some good management. Recently, however, the rates on fixed income investments, even U.S. Treasury, have risen from the very low levels. Treasuries are more attractive. There might even be some interesting bonds out there. Also, the bull run has some leading stocks with historically high valuations, maybe making long-only positions a little riskier. So what to do? I think the answer is flexibility. The market may keep going higher. It may not. It could even go down. Is fixed income a thought for some part of the portfolio? Rates are not zero anymore. You may want to protect some gains. Think about some rebalancing. Address some growing concentration issues. Maybe thinking about commodities. We at PTI may have a solution just right for you. Open an account at PTI Pro Direct, PTI's online trading platform using the Interactive Broker high-end platform. There you will find competitive rates and solid execution across all product lines and traditionally high interest on money balances. In addition, at any time you can seamlessly decide for fixed income investments to access Dan Janitas at Kratos Capital for management services. Dan and his team work tirelessly to achieve the highest returns they can, whatever risk category you are comfortable with. You can also quickly access my team for investment services and a wide array of investment strategies on the security or commodity side, protective strategies, concentration issues, or straight long. In one place, you'll be able to be flexible and ride whatever the future market holds with people you are used to hearing and trusting every day. Need help? You got it. Don't need help? That's okay, too. You'll have a great self-management platform with help always available. This market can change on a dime. I believe, like everyone else, having the right people there if needed is the way to go. Call me at 312-663-4310 or email me at time@ptisecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Going one big stocks and jacks. I'm talking about Ricky on the board. S&P futures down 475. NASDAQ futures up 13, which is not any kind of a sell-off after yesterday. We've closed on the highs yesterday. I mean, yesterday was a massive, massive rally. Hey, we've been going back and forth with some, as we talk about tariffs back and forth, because, I mean, some people have put tariffs on us. I don't know if with the going down to 30% with China from the 120 that was there for a while, but 30's higher than it was, that's been there for a while. So, and I think they have some on us going back and forth. How does, I don't know if you could know by now, but you're my source. How does all this get counted? I was talking yesterday about the friend and client who knows about this advertising company that was just involved in this big merger. Now, all along, they didn't ask me. I didn't think they should have been allowed to merge. It's like the number two firm versus the number four, but seemingly like they all get to merge. So the first thing the guy does is say he's laying off, I thought the number was 2,000. It's more like 7,000. And they're going to move a lot of the stuff over to India. So two things popped into my head regarding Professor Hal. First of all, when you have less competition like that, is it okay now for the service to be worse? Now, when I say that, now you and I have to talk to somebody from India, and maybe we can understand them, maybe we can't. A lot of those guys speak pretty good English, or maybe they don't even know where we're from or what city or don't care. Let's say there's a slight to moderate decrease in service. Is that to be expected because now they have monopoly power? But the first question, more to the point, is if they now hire 5,000 people in India, somebody has to send a check over there. Is that considered a import of service to the point, is that taxed with a tariff or not? Or could they send the check to, their group in Vietnam and the Vietnam people pay the people in India? How is that considered part of something that the tariff covers? And secondly, if China or somebody puts a 10 or 20% tariff on our stuff, which I think they have. I don't know what the number was, but I thought they did something. And I didn't read with this agreement what their number dropped to. Now, they probably have, better than me, say they got 10,000 people from mainland China in mainland universities here. Now, does the Republic of China now put a tariff on the person who has his kid in UCLA here? So instead of 80,000, it's now 88 or 96, depending on what the thing is. Are they going to charge tariffs on that? Or, how does this all work? Do you have any idea, or is it too soon?
Yeah, I think it's just too soon to figure it out. I think what Trump has always wanted, if you go back 30, 40 years, a lot of politicians were saying the same thing. I think what Trump really wants and has always wanted, and I think I mentioned this in an email that we share, the email chain that we do every day. I think Trump has always wanted a 10% across the board universal tariff. I think he's always wanted that. And I think what he's been doing over the last, now, do I agree with it? I'm not going to say that I do or don't. I mean, I prefer a system where there's no trade barriers whatsoever. But I'm just trying to explain what Trump's doing. I think he's always wanted a 10% tariff. I think that his suit, his tie, and his position on tariffs haven't changed in 40 years. If you look at him in interviews 40 years ago versus interviews today, he's wearing the same tie, he's wearing the same suit, and he's saying the same thing. I think he wants a universal 10% tariff across the board.
And what part of his massive education, which he hasn't had, does he get this from?
Yeah.
Where is the justification for that?
Well, I think what he thinks that if we get this 10% across the board tariff, I think he thinks it's going to help bring manufacturing back to the United States. I truly, honestly believe that because he's been saying it for 40 years.
What makes you think most it's not politicians? Just a tax? What makes you think it's not just a tax?
Well, you know, yeah, I don't know why a Republican would be, you know, supporting a tax increase, and they generally don't.
It's a tax increase. It's a very aggressive tax increase.
Yeah. Well, I think what Trump's trying to do is I think he's trying to do the right thing, and that can be a scary thing. Like with respect to these price controls on prescription drugs, I don't think price controls are going to lower prescription drugs. If they do lower prescription drugs, I think what'll happen is you'll end up getting shortages.
Okay.
In my health economics class.
All right, back up a second. We're just talking
in
about
the health
that
economics class.
I was just jousting with Carl about that.
Yeah.
What is the solution? Is it a change in the patent laws? Is it something? Is it an insurance issue?
It.
What is it?
Well, the thing that prescription drug companies have is they have one price monopoly. They had the one price monopoly model where, you know, in the traditional monopoly model with the one price, you had the marginal revenue curve that is twice as steep as demand, where marginal revenue crosses marginal cost. That's where quantity is determined. And then you price up to the demand curve. The only problem is we combine that with a third party payer system. When you combine that with a 20% copay, the 20% copay actually steepens the demand curve by a factor of 1 divided by the percentage. So if it's a 20% copay, 1 divided by 20% is 5. So what the third-party payer system with the 20% copay does is it steepens the demand curve, the maximum willingness for maximum price we're willing to pay. And so if then prescription drugs, once the drug is developed, it's kind of like you can model it like a video download, right? With video downloads, what's the marginal cost of me streaming Cobra Kai? You know, what's the marginal cost? If I decide to stream Cobra Kai on Netflix tonight, what's the marginal cost of supplying that download to me? Zero.
Okay, well, let's...
Right? There might be a million people watching it. Does cost of boosting that service of me watching Cobra Kai up if I decide to watch it tonight? No. The marginal cost of that is zero.
All right,
and prescription drugs, once they're patented.
All right, look, before we can, I think, and I don't know if I was taught by professors like you or what, but I always want to go from the absolute basics. And once you lose the basics and get confused with insurance and everything else, which, by the way, is very confusing. And I'm agreeing with all this. The third, but let's assume for a second. Let's go back. Well, it's 70 some years now. Let's go back to polio. All right, and everybody in this country was scared bleepless for polio. Not only is your kid paralyzed, you might not be able to breathe. You might be in an iron lung for 40 years. It was enough to make.
We also had a president that was suffering from polio. Right, he was paralyzed.
Yeah.
So it was.
It was about as nasty as you can get, right? Because it affected kids, and people would rather die than have something wrong with their kid, right? I mean, it's just the way people are.
Yeah.
And so some guy pops out with a polio vaccine. Now, there is no insurance at the time. I don't think anybody had insurance. Now, and I just was mentioning to Carl, I think my dad as a policeman was making $2,500 a year maybe. If you would have said, he didn't get a patent. Now, if he would have gotten a patent and just been the biggest ass that ever walked, in addition to being a genius, if he would have said, guess what, the polio shot's $2,500, I think that my dad would probably have come up with a year's salary for that shot. He would have borrowed it, he would have done something. and he died young, but I'm guessing that the family somehow would have found a way, whether they mortgaged their future, to not have kid in iron lung, if, you know, we came to that. Now, the question is, how much is legit? I mean, what can there is there some limit? Is the, first of all, did he get any help at all with this drug? Did some university help him? Did somebody help him? Was there an investor that helped him? Are they part of the patent? He didn't get a patent, okay, but if he did, are those people just bleep out of luck, which seems to be on a patent now, who first gets it, nobody else? Now, is there some limit? This is before insurance, before he can go through the insurance cut and all the other crap that we know involves this. We have to ask ourselves, when we give this patent for something that's unique and it really helps people, where everybody has to have it, is there some limit? Or does half of the next year's GDP go to Jonas Salk? If we can't answer that question, all we do is confuse it with all this other stuff, in my opinion. So now the question is,
well,
if you would have given him a patent, what could he charge? Is there any limit that he could charge people?
Well, he would charge up to the demand curve, but the problem there's rich people that can are willing to pay a lot for it. There are poor people who aren't able to pay a lot for
it.
Right,
so I'm saying...
So when you aggregate out to, like, a market demand curve, you're actually ignoring this individual behavior. Poor people...
Okay, when you say this curve, I'll explain what the curve is. There's a spot on your demand curve where you can maximize revenue. Where if you charge $80, you're going to have 10 people buying it. If you're going to charge $10, you're going to have 500 people buying it. There's a number in there where you're going to maximize out, right? That's what's called the demand curve, correct?
Yeah. And it's the most that people are willing to pay for a given level of quantity.
Now, what if the demand curve says 2,500 without any competing anywhere else? And so everybody who dad wasn't a policeman who didn't make 2,500, if they made 1,000, they're just bleep out of luck and they get polio? Is that the outcome we want? In other words, I'm not. At what point do we not let the company now or Jonas Salk individually make this call on something that everybody needs?
Well, I think the key here is if you listen to Austrian economists, if you listen to libertarians, I think most would say patent laws are just government grants of monopoly power.
I'm with you.
And people will claim that if we get rid. And lawyers that represent health insurance companies, they'll say the same thing. If we get rid of patent laws, then these drugs won't be developed.
I disagree with that totally.
I disagree with that too. And the reason why I say that is because there are a lot of products out there that there are no patents for. And yet, you know, firms, you know, develop products and they sell the products. So I just don't buy the argument that if you got rid of patent laws, that you would get rid of research and development. I just don't buy that at all. Because I think some people would want to develop a drug out of the goodness of their heart because they actually care about people. And the problem with patents is, who is drawn to a market with patents? Probably unsavory, greedy people. It's like, who's drawn to a market where the distribution and sale is illegal? Well, we know that the mafia is drawn, the mafia from Sicily. I just watched The Godfather 1 and 2 this weekend.
Cool.
And the drug cartels, right? I mean, who is drawn to such a market? Criminals, right? So I think the drug is gonna be produced because they care about saving people's lives. And when you put in a patent, right, you combine it with a third-party pay system where there's 20% copayment, when you combine those two together, who are you pulling into this market? Maybe some people, not all, but some who are nefarious, who are putting profits above the health of people. So I think you're giving people a license to be unsavory. When you combine a patent with this copay third-party payer system,
hell, I did a.
I think it's just a recipe for disaster.
One of my economic professors, and since you are a professor, you can critique what he said. I remember this because it was fascinating. In a non-patent world, you know, what's the motive for you and I to develop something new is what you're talking about, right? So he goes on a purely economic term. If you've developed something new, let's say something simple. Let's say the hula hoop, which nobody even knows what that is anymore. So we developed the hula hoop, and all of a sudden everybody liked it. We're the only ones making it. And it costs us $5 to make. But there's no patent, and you know, I don't think it's going to take a whole lot of strain on the brain to put together a hula hoop factory, right?
Yeah.
Maybe
your hula hoop will include free Wi-Fi.
Well, yeah. but the point of this was, we at least get the time between we put it out there and the next guy can copy. So if we put the hula hoop out there at $20 when it's costing us $5, we're going to get to make, you know, if everybody wants one, we're going to get to make $15 for, let's say, 6 months before somebody goes, wow, this dude's margin. And Carl was just talking about this. On the retail side, once you get over 10% on the margin, you essentially invite people in. Well, now there's going to be somebody, some guy like Ricky going, hey, I can make that hula hoop for $5 in 6 months by the time I put a factory up. And guess what? I can charge 10, and I'm happy as a clam, doubling my price. Or the professor would say, you and I, who had the first one, we could be clever, and instead of charging 20, we could charge like 8 or 9, which gives us way better than the normal 10% that you would get, say, in retail, but really not enough for somebody to say, I'm going to put up a whole factory and go after this guy and do it for 7, because guess what? He could just drop his to 7, and I just didn't do anything. So if you stay below the number, which somebody else says that's too much, even if it might be a better markup than people get on something else. In other words, his point was there still is an amazing reward to innovation, even if there is no patent. And you can then decide by your pricing how much you incent somebody in to compete with you. And if you're not too greedy about it, it may be never. But if you're real greedy about it, it might be next week. Do you agree with that?
I use this example in my classes all the time where I love this show called Flipping Vegas. Okay. And the guy drives around in a customized Lamborghini. Now, he didn't drive around in one during season one. During season one, he was buying up all kinds of property all over Vegas for $50,000. He would be the only person at an auction. But year four in the show, he's driving around in the customized Lamborghini. He's telling everybody there's above normal economic profit in this market. One, because he has a show. And two, he's driving around in a custom Lamborghini. When you see a guy driving around in a neon green Lamborghini, you're thinking to yourself, what does that guy do for a living? And you follow him around. You follow him around, you find out that he's buying properties on the cheap because nobody else is there to buy this rundown property. And then what happens? By year four, you're jumping into this market. And by year four, he was out of Vegas. He had to go into communities that were 20 miles south of Vegas because when he would go to these auctions, four or five people would show up, and now he has to compete against them. Now, I can imagine him, if this were the pharmaceutical industry, you know, initially he's the only player. All of a sudden, four or five people show up. Now he's got to compete against them. I can see him lobbying government for protection against his competitors, right?
Yeah.
So that's how government is used by a lot of people. They use it to protect themselves from competitors, and one way to do that is with a patent. And then when you throw in the 20% copay, that's when it gets really twisted. That's why we get these, you know, Trump said yesterday, this CEO in UK is paying $88 for the what Trump called the fat shot. In New York City, he's paying $1,200 for the fat shot.
Yeah.
Right? You throw in the 20% copay and the patent, and you get these unbelievably, incredibly high prices.
Well, I agree. I don't know the solution, but I think, you know, they're...
Well, price controls aren't the solution. That's definitely... We know that.
Okay.
Sure. I think most economists
know
that price controls aren't.
This is where you and I always have this, I won't say a flashpoint. because the weird part is that it's hard to argue with somebody you're agreeing with. I don't like price controls either, but if you give somebody a monopoly, you can't say, well, whatever he charges is okay. But once you do one thing,
that's why you revoke the monopoly by taking away the patent and the third party peers.
Except we have monopolies all over the damn place. But that's why to get
and
back.
And they're created by government.
Well, that's why when I talked to you earlier about the offshore call center, okay, if somebody's worried about competing, maybe you don't have an offshore call center because all it does is piss off your clients. But if you're the gas company and nobody can go anywhere else, you can put your offshore call center on Mars and nobody can understand anybody. Who cares? Right?
Because
there's nowhere else to go.
A monopoly can use whatever call center they want.
Yeah.
They don't care.
Yeah, they don't care.
They don't care about the customer service, right? They don't have to because they're the only game in town.
I have another kind of a connected question. Even though we argue about everything, to me, all this stuff is sort of the same subject. There was a guy here I was listening yesterday. Talk about it. I should have mentioned this with Carl. Maybe I will on Friday. There was a guy who evidently Northwestern and maybe a few other places have had some success that if people have, I don't know what stage. I'm thinking third stage, but I don't know if it's four. Third stage lung cancer. Again, I'm no oncologist, but sometimes evidently you can make the argument that some types of lung cancer don't metastasize that much. Again, this is out of my pay grade, but anyway, they found a way where if you transplant a lung or sometimes two, the person goes on. They've had real success with it. Let's put it that way. Now, what that means, whether people are living 3 years with no onset, I don't think there's anybody who's living 30 years with no onset because it just started not that long ago. But anyway, there's real success with it. So there's some guy, someplace, and he sounded like he was African American. I don't think that has anything to do with it. But he has some insurance. That now the insurance originally told him that they would pay, and evidently they found somebody. I don't know if somebody cracked up on a motorcycle or what, and they found somebody who would. Now again, this is me listening on the radio, and then the insurance company essentially said, no, that's not normal. Normal procedure these days, we're not paying for it. Now, of course, now there's like a GoFundMe page and God knows what else. But Northwestern's cost for this is $1.5 million. And I'm sitting there going, okay, the other side of my life was a somewhat of a cost accountant analyst sort of dude. I'm thinking, prove to me that that's out of pocket $1.5 million for you when the people doing it are on salary. I mean, you gotta have the surgical room, which obviously somebody else could be using. So let's say, if you're in there for 12 hours, that's $100,000 for all the machines and the people in there. But if you gave everybody in that room a year's salary or a month's salary for that one day, I don't know that I can come up with $150,000, much less $1.5 million. Where does that number come from? Out of somebody's ass? How do we? It's kind of the same argument we're talking about. Al, who gets to lob this number out there? I mean.
Yeah,
I mean, how do you come up with that?
Well, I remember seeing a GI doctor when I was first at ANT, NCANT, back in 2012, and I went in and I saw this guy because I was having trouble with I was having these really bad constipation episodes, and I think it was because I was sitting down writing, you know, publish or perish, a lot of pressure.
Driving your motorhome 12 hours a day. You're like a truck driver in your motorhome 12 hours a day.
And so I go into this GI doctor and I end up paying $80 to him. And I tell my wife, you know, I didn't get anything out of it. And the most I would have been willing to pay the guy was $80, which happens to be the copay. And I go, I bet the insurance company gets billed about $500. And sure enough, when I get the insurance notification a month later, it's $450. So that whole thing is this service provider or this pharmaceutical company, they have essentially a monopoly granted by government, and they know the most we're willing to pay. And they charge us the most we're willing to pay for that office visit. But then they bill the insurance company by that factor. One divided by the copay, which is, you know, if you're willing to pay $100, then the price that they're actually charging, that they're netting, that they're receiving is that $100 divided by the copay, which would be $500. And I figured that out without ever opening up a health economics textbook. I figured out on my own as an economist going to see this doctor. Now, when I
you figured out how smart the insurance companies are. They're real smart.
Oh yeah, and then you know, and then I find the model. I actually find the model teaching health economics last semester when I developed my course. I found this model, and all the copay does, all the third party copay does, is it steepens the demand curve by a factor of one divided by the co-insurance percent. That's what it does. It makes the curve steeper. It makes it more inelastic. And that is the hidden gem. That's why these prices are so outrageous.
Well, they don't.
You know, and the only way to get rid of it is.
I'll have one. It's sort of the same thing with. This is years ago because we haven't had this in a while. But we were one of the first people here at PTI to go on with one of those health savings plans, and we.
Yeah. Those are great. Well, those are great ideas.
Yeah, let me tell you how it worked out versus an idea. This has to be, I'm going to say, 2010 maybe. Maybe it was 2005. Who the hell knows? The deal was you could take $5,000 out of your paycheck and put it in this health savings plan. It was essentially, there's two types. One you got to use up by the end of the year, and one you can keep going so it ends up being like an IRA.
Rollover one would be ideal.
Yeah, we had the good kind. But now there's only one bank, of course, that did this in the whole Chicago area. And you couldn't put it in any stocks or anything like that. You just had to leave it in the bank. But still, it wasn't a bad idea. So essentially, you had a $5,000 deductible. And I, for 3 years, you know, I was lucky. I didn't have to go anywhere. So I've got $15,000 in there. I'm going, wow, this thing's doing better than my IRA, right? And I got 1 year where I had three kind of scares. Nothing came of it. But I ended up having to see three specialists and get three essentially MRIs or whatever they did, wherever the test was. And every single time when my doctor said, oh no, you got to go see this guy and he's probably going to make you take this test or whatever. I don't even forget what the tests were. All three of them ended up being like the visit and the MRI. Now these were all at like Northwestern. The total came to like $4,800. So that year, I ended up spending $15,000, and insurance didn't pay a dime. They knew exactly where the cutoff was. There's a reason why that thing was $5,000 and not $4,000 or $3,000 or $7,000 or $8,000.
Yeah.
And if you get an MRI, you can. There's places in Chicago now where you can go for an MRI. You can say, I fell off a curb last night. I think I did something to my ankle. You can walk in the door without even a prescription, and they will give you an MRI on your ankle for like $300, and they'll read it for you. Instead of the $5,000 you paid at Northwestern.
Yeah.
So, I mean,
well, it happened at my, this whole thing was, it happened at my condo. We had a water leak, and the property manager calls up this restoration company, and they come in and they install a temporary sink, and they do a bunch of cleanup. They install their dehydrating equipment. And guess what the bill was? It was essentially the $5,000 condo deductible, which is required by law.
Yep.
And they know that then by law I have to have, you know, Allstate or State Farm to cover the deductible. So they charge me a price that is almost identical to the deductible, minus my $250 deductible to Allstate. So these aren't coincidences, right? And the problem is we have these heavily regulated markets that end up creating these monopoly spaces. And if you want to get rid of these high prices, I think
the monopoly part comes first, and the regulation is some half-assed way of inflation eased to a four-year low in April. I don't buy that for a second. It's going to go right back up from here. But, two things, not that, but we'll get the numbers here. We're kind of discombobulated because we had the break earlier, but we get the numbers. I think I was talking to my significant other, Audrey, in real estate, and Audrey's the best. But, you know, it's funny. I said, when you sell a house to somebody now, given the fact that some of these prices, I'll use the term the the sneaky inflation. Do you think anybody's capable, when they go into a house and they say, okay, it looks like the roof is going to be another 6 years, and the window's got this much years, and the air conditioner looks like it's got this much years. Do you think anybody is capable of, you know, they get in, they figure out their mortgages, figure out they can afford it. Anybody's capable, after the last 5 years of inflation, maybe you don't even know about, of putting together some sort of a plan for the next 10 years in this house and putting down the amount of the right prices of what it's actually going to cost them to fix it? And she goes, absolutely not. Nobody has a clue that 3 years from now, the air conditioner you thought was $2,500 is maybe more like $7,000. Or the roof you think is $10,000 might be like $40,000. I mean, I think there's, or if you get a transmission out on your car, it's not a $1,500 rebuild like mine was 5 years ago. It's a $5,000 rebuild or something. I don't think anybody's even, I don't see how you could possibly have an idea of how much this inflation has affected you if all you do is look at gas and chicken, because that's the stuff you do every day. But you got to be careful to not just look at that. You got to look at, I mean, you know.
Well, like, look at all the fees.
Yeah.
The government.
Yeah. Well, Kenny was saying the tariffs isn't going to affect my eggs or chicken or anything. I said, no, Kenny, but when's the last time you were in an auto body shop? He goes, well, yeah, I just got out of there. God, that cost a bunch. I mean, 50% of the replacement parts that you put in your car come from overseas, right?
Well, I think what's going to end up happening with the automobile industry, I think we're going to get to the situation where people, especially in cities, aren't really buying cars. I think rideshare, they have these services in New York City where you can rent a car for an hour, where you can literally, you know, they'll
tried
drive
that, they tried that here.
You'll drive around for an hour.
And tried that here. It worked for about 6 months, and then they didn't. I don't know if that was a COVID.
But well, I think if people had to pay the full price of parking their car, New York City, I think we'd probably have half the amount of cars in New York City. Because I don't think people pay the full price. And the reason why I say that is because in the neighborhoods where people live, those street parking spots get eaten up by people moving in from the outer borough and then catching the subway. I think if they had to pay the full price of owning a vehicle in New York City, I think you would cut down on the sheer number of cars, because there's illegal parking, there's double parking, there's triple parking. And I think a lot of people get around, even what the government does in New York City, by registering their vehicles out of state. So I think it's really hard to price the parking spaces put in the true price of owning a car in New York City. I think it's really difficult because people find a way around it. But man, it's really expensive to live there. But can you imagine if they actually charged? Like, I mean, for example,
they're charging enough, for God's sake.
Well, but think about this though: when you park downtown Manhattan, you have to spend $40 to park your car pretty much anywhere in Manhattan. But out in a neighborhood in Brooklyn,
hell, there's
you can park for free in front of my mother-in-law's.
Okay, but whoa, on the free part. The guys that in my hood, there's people paying $30,000 and $40,000 and $50,000 in taxes. So you get to put your car in front of your house. I might say that's not free. It's included. It depends on the word
you use. Well, I've always thought that. By the way, we have permit space.
By the way, we have permit parking in our neighborhood, so you can't just come park there if you're from somebody else.
Well, they don't have that in Brooklyn.
All right, hey, these CPI numbers, I'll give them to you, and you can comment. Unadjusted change year after year. Where we get this year over year thing? I don't know, but it's 2.3%. Okay, and that's what they're crowing about on TV. The percent change March to April unadjusted is 0.3%. So times 12 is 3.6 by my math. They've adjusted that down to 0.2%, which is 2.4. So if you look at the monthlies and multiply it, it's somewhere between 3.6 and 2.4. How is that spectacular with the tariffs not kicking in yet? How is that spectacular?
Yeah, you know me. I don't really look at CPI. I look at M2, and I just looked at M2 again, and unfortunately, the numbers haven't been updated.
You got to help me here. you're still getting the March number, right? No, you're getting we're not even getting the April number yet, are we? We're a week away from the April number. The last number is March.
I think the CPI is usually done in the third week.
I'm talking about M2. We're still getting the March number.
When I look at the Fed's M2 number, I think the latest month is still March.
Yeah,
the last day of March.
Now, don't you think other people are? Let me ask you this question: do you think when Biden decided, whoever was in his administration, they're not give us the weekly numbers because we can't handle the truth? Do you think they stop gathering the numbers and some people don't get them, or just us don't get them?
I think they just don't release them on a timely basis.
To anybody?
I don't know why they do that. I mean,
to anybody or just us?
I think if you are an investment banker or a hedge fund manager, I think you're getting the up-to-date M2 because M2 is not difficult. I don't think M2 is all that difficult.
They do
it
every week. And you know what the weird part is?
I don't think it's all that.
I don't know if you don't go to the St. Louis Fed.
I think the people that are getting the M2 are these big institutional investors. It's like the stock market ticker, right? Most people see it 20 minutes late. At least that's how it used to be, right?
Yeah.
The institutional investors got to see it up to date, up at the moment, right? But what we're seeing on the news is probably 20-minute lag. And I think that's the same thing with like M2.
Well, no, actually, if you watch CNBC, they get the real feed.
They get it right there.
They got a dispensation. Well,
I think 20 years ago, wasn't it 20 years ago where what you saw on the TV was 20 minutes?
The TV now has, they have it live. But if you have any kind of an account of it, you're going to get it late, even at night when the spools open at 5 o'clock and you go to CNBC or Bloomberg, you don't get a print till 5:10. So
I think they do that on purpose because it provides an advantage. I think the M2 is a better measure of inflation, and we were talking about this last week. Year over year, March M2 is up 5%, and then if you look at the current trend that goes from January 2023 to the latest number March and then end of March, it's a quadratic trend. And if that trend continues, M2 could be as high as 10% a year from now, year over year. I think M2 is a better measure of inflation.
I think between the M2 number you're talking about and the tariffs coming in, I wouldn't be a bit surprised if by October we're not talking about a 6% CPI. And look at what happened.
Maybe that's why Powell. Maybe people are sure Powell won't. Or interest rates. Maybe that's the reason why, because you see.
Well, you know, there's a question I need to ask you. On the one hand, he's everybody pisses Trump off. He's pissing Trump off by not lowering rates, yet by increasing the money supply by 5.2% a month, which he's doing exactly what Trump wants him to do. So if he keeps putting that much money in the system, you would think that the near term rates might come down a little bit. But you know, which was weird yesterday, I don't know if you noticed it, Hal, yesterday we had this massive rally of the types of which, you know, we've seen 4% moves are really something. I mean, that's a once-in-a-10-year thing, if that. It makes me very nervous when the interest rates are going up almost as fast. They were up 1% or 2% yesterday. So today we've got the 30-year is 4.93 here this morning. I have a real problem trusting up markets when interest rates are going up at the same time.
Yeah.
And maybe that's because when I first started, the only thing you could watch was the bonds. There were no futures. But
well, the interesting thing about the yields, though, the yields, look to me, last time I looked was last week, the yields to me look like they're returning to normal because, for the last, 2 years, the yield curve has been inverted where the low-end maturity, the short-term maturity, had yields higher than the 10, 20, and 7. So when I look at the yields, to me it just looks like things are actually getting back to normal pre-COVID.
Well, I guess the question...
An inverted yield curve used to say we were in recession, right?
Well, yeah, but it also is kind of a thing. when things aren't normal, I don't know what the yield curve tells you. And when you start running your interest rates down to like zero, I don't know what the yield curve tells you. But
yeah, I don't think it can tell you much.
It's so screwed up. But yeah. I would say if you were to give you my job for a day, and if somebody, I'm not huge into fixed income, we do some for people, but if somebody comes in and says, Daddy Hal somehow wants a long-term investment. I mean, like 5 years ago, I would say that if I would have charged you and put you in a 10-year bond or a 30-year bond at like 1.5%, boy, you should like fire me right away. But what would you think? I mean, I think you and I were the few people left to realize that the interest rate formula is the real rate of interest, something you should get or lend somebody your money, plus the anticipated inflation rate. If knowing what you just said about M2 and what I said about tariffs, even though you don't agree with it as much as maybe I do, what would your number be in the next 7 to 10 years at which you think you need to get back just on the dollar going down in value, not including the real rate of interest? I'm going to say I better be getting 4 to 5 minimum on the inflation piece, and I better be getting 2.5. I better be getting 7% or more on a 20-year before I go anywhere near it right now. And I'm not getting.
Yeah, I would too. Well, that's why I think real estate is so important. I think holding real estate, like, you know, we're getting really squeezed here in North Carolina. I was adding up salary, and I'm like thinking, how is it that we can't afford to go to a hotel? And we can barely afford groceries when I'm making, you know, what I think is a pretty good salary, and
1.5 million.
It's just all the inflation. The inflation that we've had for the last 20 years.
If you didn't buy a new sports car and a new motorhome every year, you could swing this.
Well, I have a 2008 Chevrolet sedan and a 2012 minivan, and I like them because I can fix them. I just fixed the fan on my Chevrolet.
Don't tell me.
The high set.
What color is the minivan? Don't tell me it's tan.
No, it's actually red.
Okay, red's okay.
It's fire engine red. My wife hates it. She likes blue. But
you remember that commercial?
So I have a sporty look.
You remember that commercial?
The tan man. I will never buy.
They all got these buff guys in the weight room lifting weights, and they go with the owner of the tan minivan. and nobody go out and reclaim it, say it was theirs.
Well, our van looks sporty. It's fire engine red with tinted windows, so it's not too bad.
What brand?
But I just fixed the air conditioning fan. It was only working on a high setting, and the fix was a $15 resistor that mounts up into the air tunnel, whatever the ducting, right?
Wow.
This resistor sits up there because you have to cool it off. It was a $15 resistor, and now all four settings work. So I just fixed that the other day. So I love those two vehicles because I can fix them. I don't have to pay anybody to fix them for me.
Well, there you go.
But, you know, the inflation that we've had over the last 20 years has just squeezed us.
Well, yeah.
And the thing that we do have, though, is we have that property in Utah. And I'm kind of hoping they don't really do a lot of building in Utah. And supply remains a little scarce. And I think maybe in 5 years, maybe the thing doubles again.
Well, that'd be good. Hey, you know what? Start talking about changes, and I don't think that in a little period of time here, as you know, I mean, I always like to look at old trucks, right? I mean, I've bought a few in my life, but
yeah,
haven't bought one lately. And if we'd had this conversation 5 months ago, I'd have been bitching about the price of these old trucks. Well, now I can't bitch about it, Hal. They're unavailable. You can't find one. If you find a 1999 Chevy pickup in good shape with rolled down windows, if you can find one of 100,000 miles on it, it's probably worth $15,000. Brand new, brand new was 18.
Well, I think why that is because people who drive around pickups, they might, on average, they're probably good at fixing things, and so you can buy a brand new vehicle and not be able to fix it, or you can buy a 20-year-old vehicle and build to fix it.
Well,
I think that's part of.
If you buy a new one, your minimum price for if you can find a bare bones one, it's $48,000. And then
the alternator goes out. You've got to take it to the dealership. You know, pull the engine out.
You know what the standard motor is on a new full size pickup? It's a 4.
Probably. Wow.
What? I mean, really? I think that you, in 2 years, with the new cars now you put tariffs on top of it, you ever see the movie Havana, where the guys are driving around in
1950 vehicles.
In 1950 vehicles, with God knows what parts in there, you're going to see that here.
Yeah.
I mean, you see these young people or people want to get a car for their first job. Jesus, you could pay $8,000 and you're getting a piece of crap.
Well, I think that's the reason why I think automobile ownership is going to massively change. I think it's going to go to a rent for a certain period of time kind of market.
But is that what we want?
I think the price is only
rich people get to have doctors. Well, rich people get to have cars. Is that what we want?
Well, you know, the funny thing is, when I was a kid, Tom, all that I could think about was buying a car. That's all I cared about. My kids are so far away from thinking about buying a car. It's unreal. But I don't even know who they are. They're like aliens.
But you were in Idaho, and they're in New York, or they were. What the hell do you need a car in New York for?
And in Utah, they're just completely uninterested by cars. I was obsessed with cars from the youngest of ages.
I got my driver's license on my 16th birthday. First day I could get it, I got it.
Yeah, I mean, I wanted to get it when I was 14. You know, my mom wouldn't let me do it. In Idaho, you can get your daytime driver's license at 14.
Really? Wow.
But my mom wouldn't let me get it until.
Yeah. I'd get a new one.
But I was building model cars. I was building model cars, and we were playing with Matchbox cars. My kids are completely uninterested in cars. I don't know what it is.
Well,
maybe it's the media they watch. I don't know.
I got a good one for you. There's a guy that I know in the. This last story we got a dash, but in the local watering hole. And this guy's very successful. He's kind of a character, but he's very, very successful. He has like 30 old cars. So he buys the bartender.
Mr. Miyagi.
Yeah, he buys the bartender an old classic car. And I'm thinking, you bought they're buddies, you know. Guess what he buys the guy? It could have been the ugliest car. Remember the AMC, was it the Pacer with the wood sides? Remember that thing?
Oh, man.
It was red with the wood sides. I go, you consider that a gift? That thing's so ugly. The guy's never going to drive it anywhere. It's like, yeah, here.
Look at Hugo.
Here's your, you know, it's. I'm sure it's worth something, but he's like.
Or a Ford Pinto.
I had forgotten how ugly those things were. But God bless. AMC had some real, real ug bugs. God. On that note,
anyway,
the S&P, again, the CPI. 0.2 is the published number on the month, 2.3 in the year, 0.3 is the unadjusted. So it's, you know, it's a okay number for the last one before tariffs, I guess. We'll see what happens next month. Hal, thank you. S&P futures up 3, NASDAQ futures up 54. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
That's all, folks.